I always wonder if I think my friends are good artists because they're my friends, or are they my friends because I think they're good artists? I want the same thing out of both of those relationships. I want curiosity and generosity and an excitement to try and do things. So I guess they just end up aligning.
Welcome to How to Play in Slow Time, interviews on creativity, where artists pull back the curtain on their creative practices to share how they listen, play, embody, imagine, model, and collaborate towards discovering something new. In this episode, theatre maker and game developer Nathan Harrison tells us about making performances and interactive games from scratch. Nathan speaks about the modelling processes in his collaborative collectives Applespiel and Boho Interactive. These groups both use audience participation to mobilise new ideas.
Hi, I'm Nathan Harrison. My pronouns are he, him. I live and work on Gadigal Bidjigal land. I grew up on Dharawal land in Wollongong, and I am a writer and theatre maker and game designer. I have three streams or prongs to my practice trident. One of them, I work with a group called Applespiel. We make performance. A lot of the work we make is, I guess, silly. A lot of it's interactive. And a lot of it is about trying to take an existing form, usually like a media form, and put that on stage, like a podcast or like a band documentary or something like that, and just sort of let it live in a space and interrogate that. One of my stream prongs is working with a group called Boho Interactive. We're a collective of artists that collaborate with scientists to make games and interactive theatre about ecology and complex systems and network and research and all sorts of things like that. That's a really lovely practice where we just get to spend a lot of time with some very smart people and then try and turn that into something that can explore a very complicated idea in a relatively simple, hands-on, story-driven way. And then I have a solo practice outside of that, which is largely writing and performing, and usually that's to do with ecology, writing about animals, wildlife conservation, extinction, things like that. I was the first person in my family, or maybe second, to go to university. Like, we never went to galleries much. We never went to the theatre. But I did like doing drama and drawing and things like that. I read a lot as a kid. I was one of those kids. And I definitely wrote a lot of bad stories. In 1998, there was a flood in Wollongong and our house got really badly flooded. And I wrote a poem that went into the newspaper and I was very proud of that. I didn't get into theatre much in high school, but I did get into music in a big way. I got into punk music in a big way. And then I also really got into TISM, who are one of my favourite bands and I think have just like influenced me on a level that I don't always realise, but it's a similar feeling of, oh, I didn't know that you could be that clever and that funny and irreverent and dismissive of the structural culture of Australia. And that's really exciting. And then I saw them finally live when they played at a festival a couple of years ago, and they did a joke on stage that basically we had done in an Applespiel show the year before. In the background of the gig, they had tradies making these big foam letters that spelt TISM. But when they finally revealed them, the M was an N. They've spelt it wrong. And we did the exact same gag in Sorry, Sorry, Sorry by Applespiel. And that was such a, like, this incredibly revelatory, exciting moment where I was like, ah, oh, like, it feels very full circle that I'm seeing this group that have so influenced my style of humour and theatricality in ways that I don't think I recognised at the time. That was very cool. The first stage of most Applespiel shows is someone thinking of something that would be funny or fun to do. A lot of Applespiel works start as a form first rather than an idea or whatever. Like, oh, it would be funny to do X on stage or to like have to try and fit X into a show. And so someone will think of that. There's a pleasure then in we already know formally what the work is or should be, and then the struggles with making that happen are then a lot of the journey of finding the show. But usually it's like, oh, it would be fun to make a band documentary on stage. Like, how would we do that? And a lot of the time that comes with its own narrative that we can kind of follow or depart from as we please. And then, yeah, it has a sort of formal structure again that we can follow or leave as we like, but there's something there for us to just try and do. It means we can just kind of try and figure out how on earth we would do this as like a group of a bunch of people, and it just sort of flows from there. But it's usually like, oh, this would be funny, and the idea is half there already. The parameters that you set for yourself become the interesting tension or whatever. There's that great Jack White thing about how, you know, the white stripes were only ever three colors, only ever three sounds. You know, it was all about constraining that creativity to try and build a little box to live in. I think that's very good. And I think similarly, we're like, oh, we're going to do this, and we can't possibly do it properly. But the tension between what we're trying to do and what can happen is where we're going to find all the juicy, you know, I guess a lot of the comedy, but certainly a lot of the interesting bits of meaning to try and sit with as an audience and try and complete this thing together. Boho has a much more structured process because we're usually engaging with a lot of material and trying to find a way to lay that out so that we can find the bits that are useful. And a lot of that process is based on an idea of participatory co-modeling, which is getting a whole bunch of stakeholders together to build a common picture of something through a modeling process. And we've taken a lot of steps of processes that CSIRO have used, especially around like the Murray-Darling, and other scientists have used to try and get disparate groups to build a common picture. And we run that process as a way of building a map of the content that we're engaging with. Most Boho processes will start with the relationship. We'll be working with scientists, and so usually they're interested in a project about a particular idea or a particular setting. There's a lot of learning that we'll do, and that's really exciting to get to spend time with scientists just learning about the intricacies of a particular ecosystem or how natural disasters work in Southeast Asia or things like that. But then we will go through a process of trying to get all of that information and put it in a particular structure. With this modeling and mapping process, there are particular questions we ask about what is in this system, what are the relationships between the things in the system, the values, the vulnerabilities and the resilience of it. And that map usually lives on the walls of what a space we're in. It would be dozens of big sheets of butcher's paper covered in circles and lines and scribbles and words. And that forms the walls of where we work for however long we're doing it, which is really lovely. And that's an evolving and constantly growing document. But from that, we then have learned how to look at that map and identify things that are points of narrative or that are points of leverage or dynamism where people can have impact over this system. And that's where we start to pull things out to be like, oh, this would be a game. Because this is the point where whether this flips or not impacts a bunch of other things, so there should be a game there. And, you know, these four things connect in this way, so there should be a narrative there that could maybe branch or be impacted in some way by the players. I think all work, like all art, is a model in some way. Like a play is a model of some relationships, and, you know, a painting is a model of how someone sees something, you know, in the same way that a blueprint is a model or whatever. So, yeah, on a base level, like everything is formally a model. But then for us as Boho, a lot of what we're interested in is bringing that out as content and asking people to think about how we do that every day and how we do it without thinking about it and how people are doing it with, you know, systems and structures that impact us that we're not really aware of day to day, and how we might try to do that better. And if we can be more aware of it, then hopefully we can do it better and we can manage those systems better. Collaboration is really important to me. I don't love working alone. When I work alone, I end up just calling people just to talk at them for half an hour just because I need to somehow get the idea straight by vocalizing it. So I'll call up a friend and be like, I actually don't need anything from you. You just need to listen, because by the end of this conversation, I'll have probably figured out what it is. But I love being in a room because the energy from just being able to bounce around like that That's where the work comes from. And I think more and more, particularly in the wake of COVID and lockdowns, it feels like that is the work. I'm much more interested in the process of collaborating with people and spending time with other artists who I really respect and value, and just spending time in a room trying to unpack the world. That feels more meaningful and more valuable in a lot of ways than whatever we produce. I'm much more interested. I mean, they're both obviously important, but it really feels like that's the work, and that's the growth as an artist and a person is done in that room, where you're just spending time with people trying to figure things out and trying to understand something together. And I think part of that with Appelspiel and Boho, like, we've made a lot of work that is interactive, because I think some of that is trying to bring that dynamic into whatever the performance is. You know, it's about trying to figure out stuff with people, and you're not here to tell them anything because you haven't figured it out. You need the audience there. Chris Thorpe is a wonderful UK writer and performer and dramaturg, and he has this thing about solo shows where he's like, a solo show should be a question that you can't answer without the presence and the help of an audience there to sort of unpack that. And I think that's a beautiful idea, and I think that carries through to most things, because if you've already solved the problem, then you don't need to do the show. Like, the show shouldn't be a resolved thing. I always wonder if I think my friends are good artists because they're my friends, or are they my friends because I think they're good artists? I want the same thing out of both of those relationships. I want curiosity and generosity and an excitement to try and do things. So I guess they just end up aligning. Birdsong of Tomorrow is a solo show that I've been working on for a few years now, and that very much just started because I was like, birds are interesting and incredible and make me think about change and memory and time, and I want to try and untangle that in a way that hopefully is interesting. That's an example of something that was a lot fuzzier at the start and was much more, here's just a bunch of things, and that just ends up me, you know, sort of scattershot writing lots of little bits and then finally being like, well, I'm just going to have to get up and try and say something or do something. My default is to sit and talk it out with people. And so one of the nice things that a collaborator brings is the impetus to get on the floor and to start doing things. And I think about this a lot with my own solo stuff, because I'm just like, I'm interested in this and I'm going to learn about all this. And you end up writing something from the perspective of someone who has read 30 books on the thing and is now interested in this little minute thing. But I think a muscle that I'm trying to train is to like leave the thing that you end up excited about at the end of a process is very different to what you started with. And the audience has not gone on the journey. They haven't been in the rehearsal room with you for 4 weeks. They haven't read all the books you have. They haven't had the weird 2 a.m. conversations. There's not like a hard rule that comes out of that, but that's something that I feel like I've noticed more and been thinking about more. Because in a lot of ways, especially post-lockdown, I feel like the rehearsal room and the collaboration is the work, but then how do we let people into that work afterwards?
This episode is part of a series of interviews with extraordinary people talking about their creative practice. You can find the rest of the series wherever you get your podcasts. You can also purchase our book titled How to Play in Slow Time, which unpacks the theory, practice, and teaching approaches to creativity from Brill Publishers at brill.com. How to Play in Slow Time was created and produced by Charlotte Farrell, Alexandra Talamu, Brioni Trezais, and Maria White. Edited and scored with original music by Tom Hogan. Special thanks goes out to the Technical Resource Centre and the Creative Practice Lab at UNSW Sydney, where our podcast was recorded. UNSW Sydney exists on the lands and waters that have been cared for since time immemorial by the Bidjigal people of the Eora Nation, whose sovereignty has never ceded. I'm Maria White, and we hope you join us on the next episode of How to Play in Slow Time, interviews on creativity.